Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we conclude our look at Illinois' 12th District congressional candidates. Republican incumbent Mike Bost will join us. After we go behind the headlines with Missouri Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill. And, of course, most of the headlines these days are about politics. St. Louis Public Radio political reporter Joe Manis joins the conversation with the senator as we discuss the pre-election political landscape. Senator McCaskill joins us by phone. Senator, nice to talk to you. Again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let me begin with a story this morning in the New York Times that's getting a lot of play, and that is that the vast majority of the American public absolutely disgusted with politics. What's your take on that?
Well, I certainly understand it. I'm saddened by it. I think this particular campaign has really been rough in terms of coarsening our politics. If somebody would have told me in my lifetime that we would have a candidate for president that would say and do the things that Donald Trump has done, I would say we would never fall that far. But we have. And so now I think it's really important for us to take a deep breath and realize we have a resilient democracy, and the American people need to understand that there are checks and balances in our Constitution that sometimes can be very frustrating, but that's no excuse to check out of democracy, and that's no excuse to give up the freedom that we have in our country to decide who our leaders are. And that's my biggest concern, is the cynicism developed by this, particularly this presidential campaign, will cause a lack of interest and participation by so many Americans just at the time we really need it.
Do you have any November 9th fears? There's a lot of discussion that if Hillary Clinton wins the election, what happens after could be a big problem.
Well, I probably don't share the fears that many people have, because I have such confidence in her abilities. This is somebody, when she was in the Senate, kept her head down. She was not a show horse. She wasn't about being the center of attention. She was about getting the work done, and that's why so many of my colleagues over the years have been complimentary of Hillary Clinton. Now, not particularly in this campaign when things are very partisan, but when the partisan lights are off, you have a lot of respect for Hillary Clinton among my Republican Senate colleagues. I think they know she wants to accomplish things. And at her heart, she's much better policy wonk than she is a politician. I think she will be much better at assembling a good team and figuring out ways to find common ground. And she'll do that in earnest. And if, in fact, some of the Republican Party wants to keep up this hyper-partisanship and, you know, call for impeachment and call for 17,000 more investigations, I think the American people will see through that, particularly if she keeps her head down and just keeps trying to do the work and communicates effectively with the American people at how hard she's trying to do that.
Well, doesn't some of this depend on whether or not the Democrats retake the Senate? I mean, the conventional wisdom is that whoever wins, either her or Trump, that they're going to need a Senate controlled by the same party in order to get anything done. And so some of the perception is that she's going to be mired by they won't fill the Supreme Court, they won't do this, they won't do that, unless fellow Democrats also take over the Senate, even if it's just by a small number. I'm just curious do you think your party's going to be able to succeed in doing that? There's about a half dozen races that are pretty close, including the one here.
Yeah, I feel, you know, cautiously optimistic. I don't want to jinx it. But as you might imagine, since I have this genetic defect that makes me really interested in all this, I have followed it incredibly closely. I've been consuming crosstabs on polls for breakfast, and I feel very comfortable about where we are. I don't know that we will control the Senate. I can't tell you whether they're going to control it by one or two or three, but I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to win enough races that we, in fact, do have, the Democratic Party does have control of the Senate.
Now, in Missouri, there's been these polls that show Trump up by any much from 10 to 15, and there's been this thought that that will have a down-ballot effect. I mean, you dealt with something similar 4 years ago, And so one of the contentions is that if Trump wins by 10 or 12 or 15, that could hurt Democrat Chris Coster's chances of becoming governor, or and probably kills off Kander's chances of knocking off your fellow senator, Roy Blunt. I'm interested. How do you see things as they stand now?
Well, I speak from some significant experience in this realm, and this is one of the things I love about Missouri. For those of your listeners that are old enough to remember, you know, our state elected John Ashcroft and Harriet Woods, governor and lieutenant governor, in the same election. And they didn't agree on anything. And fast forward to 2012, Mitt Romney won Missouri by that 10 points you're talking about. But yet, I won by 16, and Jay Nixon won by like 13 or 14. So Missourians make up their mind in each race. And I think that Jason Kander has an advantage in this race because I think the margin you're seeing for Trump has everything to do with this desire for an outsider that is really prevalent this year. And this is exacerbated by the way Trump has campaigned and the way he's been so irresponsible and bombastic and, I think, showing a temperament that is frightening, frankly, for a potential commander-in-chief. But I do think that Jason is, you know, a young veteran who has is relatable and authentic and has an incredible life story about his service to our country. I think that Missourians will take an independent look at both Chris Coster and at Jason Kander. And by the way, those two campaigns and those two candidates are very different. But I think the majority of Missourians, as I like to explain to people, we've got about a third of the state that will always be for Republicans. And we have slightly less than a third of the state that will always be for Democrats. And the rest of the Missourians who decide statewide elections in our state, they call them like they see them, race by race. And that's why I feel very comfortable that we will once again have a Democratic governor and, for the first time in many years, have two Democratic senators.
What does your support for Mr. Kander do to your relationship with Senator Blunt?
Well, it's awkward. I'm not going to, you know, I try to always be very candid. It's awkward because we're friends. And obviously, we both care about our state. But as I like to remind him, there was one person that was on their cell phone for 48 hours straight trying to maneuver the race in 2012 so that Todd Akin would step down and he could help put in that slot a more moderate Republican that would have a better chance of beating me because Roy Blunt in 2012 wanted the Senate to be controlled by the Republicans. So he understands that I have those same desires, and this is not personal to Roy. This is really, honestly, in this race, this is, I think, Jason Kander is a very special young man with a lot to offer this state and, frankly, our country.
You say that you and Senator Blunt are friends. Are you friends like Tom Eagleton and John Danforth were friends?
Well, you know, that those days kind of went away when...
Yeah.
When Frist campaigned against Tom Daschle, and because there had not been this going into other states and campaigning or campaigning against colleagues really until then. And then the gloves came off, and it's like other things in politics that have changed. You know, you used to be able to, we had more Republicans and more Democrats willing to compromise 10, 20 years ago than we have now. People are way too focused on pleasing the base and aren't willing to take the chances that you have to take in order to find the middle and find the sweet spot of compromise, because whenever you compromise, it makes your base mad.
Well, I mean, you've got in some of your staff, I mean, or at least allies, you know, working hard for Kander. You've been putting out all these fundraising letters, I know, for Democratic candidates in a number of states. Are there any particular ones that you're particularly confident about? A, B, what you just said, whether if your candidates lose, aren't the winners going to be kind of irked at you because you were among those putting out? I mean, it's not just saying I support somebody. I mean, you've got letters and lots of stuff in favor or against different people.
All of us do, you know, and they do too, by the way, and they did when I ran. You know, it won't change my ability to work with my Republican colleagues. And I feel really confident that we will do fine in Wisconsin. I feel very confident about Illinois. I feel very confident about Pennsylvania. I feel really good about North Carolina. I feel really good about New Hampshire is really close. It could go either way. Indiana is really close. It could go either way. And obviously Missouri, I really do believe that Jason Kander will win this race, but it's really close. And no one, including, and I can guarantee you, Jason Kander is not taking it for granted. It is, you know, anybody who takes it, a Democrat getting elected statewide in Missouri for granted, doesn't know Missouri.
Well, and one thing I've been wondering about, is there the voter excitement, I mean, among the Democratic base? I mean, that's one of the things that didn't happen in 2010, and that's why Roy Blunt really creamed Robin Carnahan in that Senate race, was a lot of African-Americans and others in the base, wasn't just minorities, didn't show up. How confident are you that they're going to show up this time in Missouri?
There is an awful lot of energy out there. I have been, I mean, they are filling every volunteer shift across the state. There are offices open across the state. You know, we're used to doing, the Democrats are, a ground game in Missouri without a presidential campaign. Many states aren't used to that because they are in a presidential year. You just have the presidential campaign doing it. But in 2012, we didn't have a presidential campaign, and we had to build a really robust volunteer base, get out the vote base, field program. And Chris Koster and Jason Kander have done exactly that this cycle, and I have paid very close attention to that, and I feel really good about it.
We are talking with Senator Claire McCaskill. She is in Washington, and we're talking about politics, which might surprise some people, I doubt. But that's what we're talking about. Joe Manis with me in studio. We'll take this break, come back, and continue our conversation with the senator in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Claire McCaskill. Senator, I know that one of the things you're most interested in with what's going on here in the state of Missouri is Constitutional Amendment 2. There are a lot of amendments and a proposition on the ballot. Why are you focusing on that? That, of course, is the campaign spending limitation.
Yeah, I think it's the most important thing on the ballot. I have watched in horror as the state legislature and statewide candidates in our state have been auctioned to the highest bidder. We have a couple of billionaires in Missouri that have decided to write million-dollar checks to candidates. You know, we're the only state in the union that has unfettered rules. I mean, no rules, nothing about how much can be given and lobbyist gifts, and this whole milieu of ethics is, and by the way, people are going to feel like they've done this before because they have. They voted by a 74% margin to put limits in place, and then when the Republicans took over the legislature and Matt Blunt was elected governor in 2008, they repealed that provision that the Missouri voters had put in place. And what that has actually done, it is really, I think, I've never run in a race where I didn't have limits. And this isn't going to fix everything. I'm perfectly aware that we've got to repeal Citizens United and we've got to fix all of the dark money in politics. But when you're running a race and you need to show that you can raise money to be viable, the notion that one person can deliver that to you, I mean, we had a candidate in Lieutenant Governor's race who literally got $1 million check from Rex Singfield. Well, now who gives $1 million to a lieutenant governor candidate? And what do they want? I mean, it is so unseemly. And if you're that candidate, who are you worried about? Are you worried about a wide swath of people who have helped you from all walks of life? Or are you worried about one guy who wants to mold state government in his image?
Now,
and I just think it's really important that we get this amendment passed. And by the way, the irony of this amendment is it was put on the ballot by somebody I don't agree with on much. But I admire him because he's one of those billionaires, and instead of buying candidates like these other guys have done, he decided to try to help clean it up. And I, even though Fred Sauer and I disagree on a lot, I do admire his choice in this regard.
Now, there have been a lot of discussion about some of what some see as errors in this legislation, such as the fact that it does not apply to local candidates or county candidates. The questions have been, well, will they continue to raise unlimited amounts? Will the billionaires just put the money there, and then somehow that money will magically make its way to the limited races for the legislature or statewide?
Joe, the language specifically prohibits committee-to-committee transfer.
No, I know, but there's still thoughts that somehow, that there needs to be something about the fact that the local candidates would be unfettered. And, of course, his lawyer has told me that, well, they hope maybe the General Assembly would do something about it. That's what Koster's been saying. And he used to oppose donation limits, but he's a convert now. So I'm just curious. There are some say that this measure is going to be caught in court. I know you had been calling for some sort of campaign donation limits for years. So had Governor Nixon, but nothing ever ended up on the ballot before. So, I mean, I guess how imperfect of a vehicle is this? And do you think there's going to be a lot of either court fights or pressure on the General Assembly to fix things in it?
All those things you say may very well be true, but it's no excuse not to pass it. It's no excuse not to take this step. I would much rather have this on the books and let the people who want to still buy elections fight it in court, I hope unsuccessfully. I would much rather, hopefully, if this gets the kind of vote I hope it does, it will be a very clear message to the General Assembly that they are way off base in the way that they have blocked any of these reforms. It is outrageous to me how out of touch they are on this subject matter in Jefferson City. So I think that if Chris Koster is the governor, I think he will be a good leader on this. I think there may be very well ways to apply it to local offices. But frankly, I don't really see Rex Samefield writing $1 million check to a school board member or to a city council member. I mean, he's interested in controlling the state government. And I think Humphreys is the same way. I think he wants to control Jefferson City. So I think you got to crawl before you can walk. We still need to repeal Citizens United. But any flaws there are in the drafting of this measure should be overcome by the need to get started on ethics reform in the state.
If Hillary Clinton is elected, does that lead directly to a repeal of Citizens United? She'll have one, probably several, Supreme Court appointments.
Well, let's hope. Now we have Republicans talking about that they're going to completely abandon their constitutional duty in terms of advising consent of Supreme Court nominees. But let's hope. And by the way, if you read this in the United case, even in that decision, they invite for further regulation by Congress. And we have introduced and voted and tried to get more votes on a minimum of just disclosure so that we know. I mean, I think it is outrageous for voters not to know where the money is coming from. And that, to me, is the most egregious part of Citizens United. Not only are you walking around all these billionaires' money, you don't even know who it is. And so I'm hopeful that this campaign finance reform not only remains at the top of the agenda in Missouri, but that we can get something done with the Citizens United case in Washington.
Do you take the Republican senators who have commented on this at their word that they will block any future Supreme Court appointments if she wins?
I'm not sure. Some of them might take it their word because that's kind of their deal. And keep in mind, we're going to be suffering, assuming that Hillary Clinton is president, and that's an assumption that I'm not making because I don't want to jinx it, but assuming Hillary Clinton is president, then you're going to have a number of Republicans that are immediately running against her for president. And they're not going to do anything except fight her because they're appealing to their base so they can get the nomination. I'm thinking particularly of people like Ted Cruz, perhaps people like Paul Ryan. And by the way, if Trump were to get elected, you probably would have the same conclusion on the other side. But the majority of the senators, I think, I do think the people who have said that are outliers. I think of the colleagues in the Senate, the Republican colleagues I work with day in and day out, none of them have said anything that outrageous. And I don't think that is the view of the majority of the Republican senators, that they should decide that until they elect a president they like, they're not going to do their duty under the Constitution.
So at this point, what are you going to be doing the next few days?
Well, actually, I was going to laughingly correct you. I am not in Washington. I am actually on my way to the airport to pick up my daughter, who's flying into St. Louis to, in fact, campaign for the weekend. I will be I'm doing some more television this evening, and then tomorrow I'm on my way. I'm going to do a get out the vote rally kind of canvassing, pumping up the volunteers in South County on tomorrow morning, and then I'm on my way to Kansas City where I'll be doing campaign events on Saturday and Sunday, coming back to St. Louis on Sunday night, and I'll be doing whatever cleanup aisle five we need on Monday, and then on Tuesday I'm going to go to New York and be there at Hillary Clinton's event in New York on Tuesday night.
We only have a short time left. I just wanted to get your take, Senator, on what's been going on the Republican side with regard to the assault allegations against so many women that have been made against Mr. Trump, given the fact that you've done so much work on the sexual assault issues in the Senate.
Well, I mean, if I can find a silver lining in Trump's candidacy, I think it has provided an atmosphere where a lot of women realize that the day has passed where you must remain quiet when you have sexual contact that is unwelcome. And that sexual contact can take many forms. I do think that it will empower more women to be stronger and braver about holding people accountable for unwanted sexual contact. And so that may be the most positive thing that comes out of Donald Trump's candidacy. It causes a sober reflection when we think that we always think of our president as role models for our children. And whether you like Barack Obama or think he's terrible, I don't think anybody would argue that he and the First Lady have been tremendous role models for young Americans. I just worry, I have deep concerns about Donald Trump as a role model. And I'm hoping that I have confidence and optimism that the majority of Americans feel the same way.
Let's end it on that note. Senator Claire McCaskill, thank you so much for being with us and for joining Joe Manis and me for this segment of the program. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, Illinois Congressman Mike Boss makes his case for re-election next week. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.